The Education and Employment Committee will now come to order. Misty, please call the roll.
Chair Masullo?
Here.
Vice Chair Bell?
Here.
Committee Whip Tremont? Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Representative Bankson?
Here.
Representative Kennedy? Representative Daniels?
Here.
Representative Esposito?
Here.
Representative Fine?
Here.
Representative Franklin?
Present.
Representative Gonzalez Pittman?
Present.
Representative Coster?
Here.
Representative McLean?
Here.
Representative Mello is excused. Representative Rizzo? Representative Tribolsi?
Here.
Representative Tuck?
Here.
Representative Valdez?
Good morning, present.
Representative Waldron?
Here.
Representative Woodson?
Here.
Thank you, Misty. Members and guests, please remember to silence your cell phones or any other communication devices you may have. Any members of the public that wish to speak or testify, please feel free to fill out an appearance form and give it to one of the staffs to circulate to us. Members, today we have three bills for consideration, and considering it's an early morning, but we all have large schedules, we'll jump right in. We'll start with Rep. Temple. You're recognized to present PCS for HB 1361 on education. Rep. Temple, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair, and Ranking Member.
Here I am.
Oh, there you are. Okay, wonderful. And other members. PCS 1361, some of you have already heard this bill or a form of this bill, so I'm going to try to highlight the differences and changes over time within this. So this bill focuses on New World Scholarship accounts, and this section remained the same from the original bill with one new item. In this item, the bill provides that the department must release the student scholarship funds to the SFO within 45 days of eligibility determination. That way we expedite the process to make sure the services get to the students as quickly as possible. Next, the New World's Reading Initiative. This part changed from the original bill. The PCS maintains the original purpose, but the bill, the New World's Reading Initiative, by no longer remaining the program, and the PCS pulls out the reading and math tutoring program. So that was initially in there. We're pulling that piece out. So the initiative creates a separate section to focus on the tutoring. So it just removes that piece of it. The PCS still names UF Lassington Center as initiatives administrator, but maintains initiatives focus on reading. The tutoring program that we talked about would still be administered by the UF Lassington Center, still focusing on bolstering student achievement, both in reading and mathematics for struggling students. Part of the options for tutoring is in-person, a tutoring grant for that would be stipend, and then evidence-based automated literacy tutoring software grant as well, so it's a computer component. This part is new. We're going to look to add AI intelligence, or artificial intelligence, excuse me, via grant managed by DOE to accelerate student learning and reduce teacher workload. As far as the grants, the AI for subscription fees for professional learning to support and accelerate learning for students in grades 6 through 12 during the school day. The AI platform, much like what you learned about in previous session or previous committee meeting, you know, we need the most current, so the GPT-4 or greater, provide professional learning for the teachers to utilize this software, this program, provide one-on-one tutoring aligned to our best standards for reading, and provide standards-aligned lessons and insights for our students. Lasting tutor program stipends for in-person tutoring, like we mentioned, it could, during the school day, before, after, or even during the summer. At a minimum, provide to kindergarten through fifth students who have a substantial deficiency in reading or math. Also, the tutor software program provides during the school day to additional literacy or mathematics support through evidence-based automated literacy tutoring software. So this provides real-time opportunity, real-time learning and adjustment for those students. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the bill.
Very good. Thank you, Rep. Temple. I know you have a couple, well, there's a couple amendments, one from you and one from Rep. Kennedy. But before we get to those, members, any questions on the bill as presented? Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Could you elaborate a little bit more on the 45 days that you spoke about being expedited for the program itself?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. From the time that they receive the notification of student is deficit, they have 45 days to release those funds so we can then turn around and get those funds where they need to be so the students can receive the support services that they need.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Do we have a total amount of how much DOE will be receiving for the grant?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That has not been determined yet. I know in the past there were $16 million set aside for reading, and it's my understanding that that will be the same, but again, it has to go through the process.
I didn't understand. I'm sorry?
$16 million was 16? Set aside last year.
Okay.
And so that is looking to be the same, but of course, you know the process, they could change that number.
Okay. Rep. Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Temple, I have a few questions for you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. The first question that I have has to do with the Lassinger Center that has been designated as the administrator for the New Worlds Initiative Program. Do you anticipate to have any other SFOs coming, and what was the process for choosing the Lassinger Center, even though I have no problem
Rep. with the Lassinger Center? Rep. Woodson, the Lassinger Center is not the SFO.
That's what it's saying. The administrator, I say. I didn't say SFO. Okay. I said the administrator.
Oh, I thought you said
SFO. No. For the New World Initiative Program. That's
okay.
What I say.
All right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I made it clear, the administrator, not the
administrator.
Okay. Yeah.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So, I can't speak to the specific process, but you and I talked on the phone that we don't anticipate others. They're already doing a similar program with the reading throughout the state, and so we're adding to that to include the math. And they've had great success from the student outcomes, but also talking to educators and the connection and the training and the services that are provided. I have not heard one negative comment towards what the process is. Outside of time to learn the information, but the actual instruction and the communication back and forth has been fantastic. So we want to make sure that we support quality programs like them to continue the process, to continue improvement with students.
You're recognized.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Temple. My other question has to do with the bill analysis, actually, that stipulates that the funds appropriated last year have not been getting out to handle the tutoring program. When do you anticipate that money to be getting out so the children could have access to those services?
You're recognized.
Within 45 days of notification.
45 days?
That's what we put in the, yes, ma'am. So we want to make sure that it gets, in the conversation, I think it was, I don't want to exaggerate, but I think close to 100 days. And so we put a time frame, 45 days, to get that out to where it needs to be so we can get the students what they need.
You have another question, Rep. Woodson?
Yes, sir.
You recognize. Oh, that's it. Okay, great. Rep. Valdez, you're recognized.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Good morning, Representative Temple. On page 3 of the analysis, in the second paragraph after the 3 bullets in the top of the page, it states that the students enrolled in the program demonstrated significant gains of up to 55% growth rates in reading achievement during the 2022-2023 school year. Where is this data? Where can we find that data?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We can provide that for you, but DOE, I would imagine, to have that information, but we'll get that for you.
Thank you very much.
Follow up, sir? You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on page 9, I need some clarification. On page 9 of the staff analysis, where we talk about the tutoring program, it states that the bill establishes a tutoring program to be administered by an eligible nonprofit SFO. So help me walk through the relationship between the Lassinger center as the tutoring provider. If they're not an SFO, then how are these dollars, how is this grant going to be administered through? That confused me a minute ago.
You're recognized.
Where are you reading that at?
Page 9 of the staff analysis,
right.
Directly below tutoring program after the two bullets in the very top of the page.
You're recognized to continue.
Thank you.
So I want to make sure that...
Can you rephrase the question real briefly, Rep.
Sure.
Valdez?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're clear what you want.
So it's basically a clarification question followed up from Representative Woodson's question in reference to the SFO. So the staff analysis says the bill establishes a tutoring program to be administered by an eligible nonprofit SFO. And it's my understanding that the last singer program or center is the one that's going to be administering the tutoring aspect and the funds, the grant for that particular program. So is the last singer considered in this case the SFO, or is that money going to be administered through one of the SFOs, either AAA or Step Up? What's going to be the process to administer those funds?
I can answer that for you, but you're welcome to. The SFOs are separate from the Last Singer Center. The funds will flow through the SFOs. Currently, we have two.
Correct.
That process, as you know.
And we will also address that in conferencing to clarify and clean that language up.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Are you okay on that one? Other questions? All right, we'll take up the First Amendment. Barcode A1. Rep. Temple, you're recognized.
Thank you. This amendment allows the use of AI platform for mathematics tutoring and required the platform to provide districts and school level reporting and parental access to the AI interactions. That is the amendment.
Very good. Questions on the amendment, members? Any questions on the First Amendment? Okay, public testimony. We have Nathan Hoffman, Florida Foundation for Florida's Future. He waves in support. That ends public testimony. We have debate. Any debate on the amendment, members? Debate. Seeing no debate, we'll show that amendment adopted without objection. The next amendment, and I apologize, I had said Rep. Kennedy, but it's actually your amendment, Rep. Temple. So we'll give you full credit for it. You're recognized to present Amendment A2.
I don't mind sharing with Rep. Kennedy. This amendment is to clarify that the stipends for in-person tutoring should, at a minimum, be provided for students in kindergarten through fifth grade.
Any questions on that amendment, members? Questions on that amendment? All right, we have Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida Future, also waves in support of that amendment. We're in debate. Debate on the amendment, any debate? Seeing none, we'll show that amendment adopted without objection. Now we are on public testimony for the bill as amended. Do we have any public testimony? Right, Alex LaRue, Alexis, I'm sorry, waves in support, Step Up for Students. Barney Bishop, waves in support. Sarah Massey, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waves in support. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future, proponent, I'm assuming you're gonna wave in support. Oh, you'd like to testify. You're recognized.
Appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. Nathan Hoffman, on behalf of the Foundation for Florida's Future. We're supportive of the bill as amended. We think it makes several important additions to the New World's Reading Initiative. We're particularly interested in the tutoring program that's coming online and so far as it addresses both reading and math deficiencies, which we know, especially coming out of the pandemic, As much emphasis as we've placed on reading in the past, we need as much emphasis now moving forward on math, so we're appreciative of that. And then we're very excited about the AI language that's included in the bill. I think all of us were, jazzed, I would use the word, at what Sal Khan presented last week in committee. The opportunity to provide grants to school districts to support professional learning and AI for educators, as well as put into place the tutoring capabilities, the personalized tutoring capabilities that AI platforms like KhanMigo provides, we think is a really good step in the right direction for Florida to take. And again, we're supportive of the bill as amended and appreciate the sponsor and the committee for the indulgence.
Thank you. Members, that ends public testimony. We are in debate. Debate on the bill as amended. Any debate? Rep. Valdez, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Temple, thank you for the late night conversation last night on your bill. I am excited to see, you know, the expansion of the world New World initiatives to pre-K as well as including math. I think it's very important. You know, the moment we start putting in a word problem, it's no longer math, it's now grammar. So it's important that students learn how to read so then they can decipher those problems. So I'm really excited about this. I want us to be sure that as the bill moves, although it's at its last stop, right? But that we really define whether or not the Lassinger Center is an SFO, because on page 3, footnote 9 actually states that the University of Florida Lassinger Center for Learning is a registered scholarship funding organization. So we have to make sure that we need to be clear. At least what brings me some sort of comfort in that particular is creating curriculum and strategies to help educate our children, that the Lassinger program is led by professors, educators that are in this work. So it brings me a lot of calm in knowing that the curriculum being put forth comes from educators. So that to me is very important as we are developing strategies on how to help and finding different ways outside of the box to help our students. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this on the floor, and hopefully by the time it gets to the floor, we can go ahead and clear up some of these things and be specifically clear, because this is important and we've got to get this right. Our kids depend on us to get it right. So I will be more than happy to work with you every step of the way to make sure that we have a very good product to support our children and our educators. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Further debate? Any further debate? All right. Well, I want to thank you, Rep. Temple, for a great job on this bill. And I think that I'll add to the flavor of being jazzed by saying we're rocked. You know, our job here is to try to provide the best tools for students so they have the best opportunities to be successful in their education and then onward as they launch into their careers of productive lives, hopefully staying in the state of Florida. And what you've done with your bill is you've looked at those tools that are available today, particularly with artificial intelligence, as well as in-person learning. And you've made that available in a way that makes sense. Having the older children that should have the ability to be able to use screen times effectively, and not the younger children, which probably shouldn't have screens. And you've been able to combine that, and combining math, which personally I think is extremely important in today's world and will be even more important tomorrow. So I'm in favor of your bill, and I ask that the rest of the committee also support it. You're recognized to close.
Thank you so much. The work that we've done over the past several years with education has been important, and this is right along with that, to help focus on providing the tools, the resources, the means, every opportunity to help support our young people get where they need to be the future of Florida. And so I'm really proud of the K-12 or K-5 piece of this. We really have to make sure that, you know, I would strongly encourage our leaders in the school system to make sure that we focus on the kindergarten and first graders as well as the third, fourth, and fifth, because is the foundations that set their future and their path. And I've seen it time and time again, the students that they get those strong foundations, they soar. So that is a really important piece to this bill, I believe. So thank you for all the comment, feedback, questions, and dialogue, and we'll continue this process as we move forward. And with that, I close.
Very good. Having closed on this bill, Misty, please call the vote.
Representative Spangson?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Fine. Franklin?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Mello? Rizzo? Tribolsi?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Masullo?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, will show PCS for HB 1361 reported favorably as amended. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair.
Next up, members, will have CS for HB 1403 by Chair Tomko on school choice. Chair Tomko, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry, guys, have a really big folder here. Members, last year we passed one of the largest expansions of school choice in the nation, which has enabled more parents to choose the education that meets the needs of their student. While hundreds of thousands of families have benefited from these scholarship programs, there have been issues with providing funds and the time frame we would expect. To address these issues, HB 1403 establishes separate application and renewal deadlines for the scholarship programs so that renewals can be funded earlier. Any applications received after the deadline will be considered for funding the next school year. Payment for full-time tuition and fees must be made by the scholarship funding organization within 7 business days of approval by the parent and school. To address concerns about educational options available to students, the bill allows personalized education program students or PEP scholarship students to use their funds for when instruction is provided away from the school under a student learning plan. Members, as you remember, during special session, we took steps to address the unprecedented demand for the FES UA scholarship. Because interest in this scholarship continues to grow, HB 1403 increases the annual growth in the number of new FES UA scholarships from 3% to 5% of the ESE population. If demand ever exceeds 95% of capacity again, the bill allows an increase of an additional 1% the following year. The bill also clarifies the eligibility by removing an age limitation for 3- and 4-year-old students with disabilities and allows military families to qualify on permanent change of station orders. Finally, the bill also increases the transparency by requiring SFOs to report on performance metrics related to applications and reimbursement requests and to solicit feedback from parents, private schools, and providers prior to implementing substantial modifications to the reimbursement process. Mr. Chair, that is the bill.
Very good. Members, questions on the bill? We do have an amendment or two, maybe one. But anyway, questions on the bill before we get to amendments? Any questions on the bill? All right. Seeing no questions, we'll go to amendment. Rep. Franklin has an amendment that he would like to withdraw. Showing no objections, we'll show that amendment withdrawn. The next amendment, barcode 204451 by Rep. Tomko, you're recognized to present.
Thank you so much. It changes the timeline for applications to apply to serve as an SFO in Florida scholarship programs, allowing for an organization to apply at any time to participate. And to ensure that vulnerable families are aware of their choice options, the amendment restores the notification requirements of the HOPE scholarship program that requires the school principal to notify the parent of a student who has been subject to an incident at school, including bullying or harassment, of the opportunity to enroll in his or her student in another public school that has capacity or to apply for a scholarship to attend an eligible private school under the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship a Family Empowerment Scholarship. That is the
Very
amendment.
Good. Having explained the amendment, any questions on the amendment, members? Questions on the amendment? All right. Seeing none, do we have public testimony on the amendment? Seeing none, do we have any debate on the amendment? Any debate? You did not. You did. All right. Let me see if we can find it. Hang on a minute. What is your name, sir? All right. Why don't you just come up and we'll let you testify. And if we don't have it, we'll ask you to fill it out. We do have it. We do have it. Actually, we have a couple. Mr. Stevens from the Florida Citizens Alliance, you're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Rick Stevens. I'm the co-founder of the Florida Citizens Alliance. And as members of the committee may be aware, we have been urgently urging during this process for you to restore the Hope Scholarship. And I rise to thank the bill sponsor for hearing our concerns and to recognize that several members of this committee worked behind the scenes to help us come to a good resolution. We thank you for protecting students. One of the goals of this session has been to make safe environments for students, and this will do that and help our bullied students make sure they get an environment where they can learn. We know that students in a bad environment don't learn, so this will help them get to the right one. And we want to commend the committee for listening, and thank you for advancing this very important amendment.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Next, we have Karen Jarosz from the Heritage Action for America. She waves in support. Are you here? Thank you. Now, that ends public testimony. Members, we're in debate. Debate on the amendment. Any debate? Rep. Vadez, on the amendment? No? Any debate on the amendment? All right. Members, seeing none, we'll show that amendment adopted without objection. And now we are on the bill, public testimony. Michael Barrett, Florida Conference for Catholic Bishops. You here? Waves in support. Thank you. Jason Crawford is an opponent. Jason Crawford, you're recognized. And on deck, Lance Kerwin.
Thank you.
You're recognized, sir.
First. This is on already, right?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good. Well, good morning. First, I want to say thank you to each of you. I know that you do a thankless job oftentimes as doctors see sick people, you see people when they have problems and they want them all fixed. So from the bottom of my heart to you, I want to say thank you. I know that you spend time after hours and pore over these things. I do oppose this bill, but I want to give a little testimony about myself as a home education parent. We weren't really interested in PEP to begin with. We like the freedoms, and we didn't really want any of the money or any of the oversight. But my wife and I do struggle with a single car and getting to different places, and we're very strapped on our income. We piece everything together, and we both looked at each other and thought, well, let's dare to trust and take a risk and see what kind of opportunities we can provide for our children with the PEP scholarship. And specifically speaking about the instructional materials and the equipment for instructional materials, language that's found here limits it back to the four core subjects. And what we really were looking for and trusting for were those things beyond the four core subjects, the things that lead our kids to paths in career and technical or the arts. Sometimes a great history lesson is introduced through art. And my daughter, one of my daughters, you know, she loves painting, and they always draw on the sidewalk with sidewalk chalk. It's pretty cheap. But canvases are not cheap, and nor are paints to actually do real artwork like they see and want to replicate in some of these some of these history books or some of the literature books that we read through. Good literature accompanying good art as it's studied through history is a really important of seeing those things come to life through the ages. So I do think that there's problems with the language for the instructional materials because it's just too limiting. I do understand that you have optics that you have to worry about. You've made a great program, and then you've heard a lot of complaints and maybe a lot of things like was brought up in the Choice and Innovation Subcommittee. Parents can you know, purchase riding lessons but not buy the horse. And to avoid hyperbole, we were never allowed to buy horses to begin with because those aren't really permitted anyway. But the things that the limitations this is putting on it is cutting out way more than that. And it's a bit too far.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Lance Kerwin, and I'll ask everyone that's presenting to try to be concise and specific if you can. It would really help the committee as we deliberate. You're recognized, sir.
Chair Masullo, thank you for the opportunity to speak before the committee today in reference to House Bill 1403. When our daughter Grace was diagnosed with a very rare disease called juvenile dermatomyositis, my wife Sharon and I knew that we had to find the best educational options for her. Every 4 weeks for the last 10 years, she's had to go basically to cancer center. She's got a good prognosis now. 10 years ago was real tough. Throughout Grace's K through 12 journey, we utilize a variety of school choice options, including hospital homebound schooling, traditional brick and mortar, and virtual education. Grace is now thriving at Lee University. And my wife would be here today, but she's actually up there for her treatment. But Grace is in college and doing very well because of the educational flexibility we had. A lot of it was we had to go as parents and speak to it. And I'll wrap up with this point. This is why we urge this committee to continue to build upon school choice expansion from last session and allow students to use ESEs for full-time private online instruction. And I know how the process works. It's been years since I've been here, but Representative Franklin, thank you for the amendment, even though it was withdrawn. It just shows the spirit of what this group's about, and if I could just speak life into you, I think this is the most important thing going on today at the Capitol. Thank you so much.
Are you a proponent of the bill, sir?
I am a proponent, yes, sir.
Very good. Thank you. Next up, we have WeBar, Parents for School Options. You're recognized and on deck as Nathan Merchant. You're welcome. You're recognized, Ms. Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and honored members of the committee. And I just wanted to add to what Lance has said. So my name is Wei Barr. I'm a board member of the Parents for School Options, and we're a national advocacy group that advocates for all kids and all options. So, I mean, first, I would love to commend you guys, because when we talk to legislators in other states, we say look at Florida, because you guys have done truly remarkable work here for the kids here in the state. And but we were disappointed to find out that there are some families that are still left out after all the expansion. And we'd love to ask for your consideration in the future to consider expanding to include online private schools. And really, earlier this month, we have actually joined several other organizations and sent a letter to you guys, and thank you for your consideration. And we have asked you to please consider expand the program to allow families to use their FES funds for full-time private online or blended schools. We understand you may have concerns about that consideration, but I'd like to invite you to think about this question. Even if you have the ability to choose, but if you don't have the option that best meets your kids' need to choose from, what good does it do you? I'm from the state of Tennessee. That's where I live. I would love to go back to my governor and my legislators and say, look at Florida. They are for all kids and all options. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, ma'am. Please consider moving to Florida. Dr. Scott Gines, you're recognized, and then on deck is Alexis LaRoe, who waves in support.
Well, good morning. My name is Dr. Scott Gines. We have two children, now adults, one precocious and one with special needs, and my profession frequently moved me, sending me 6 to 12 months in advance of my family. Our son Patrick attended private school, he attended Christian school, he attended public school, he was homeschooled, and attended high school in three different states and time zones. Different needs, different seasons of life made each of these school choices very important, but that day's technology did not allow or did not provide virtual options. Our daughter Kelly's educational journey and those choices were more limited. In Florida today, we have opportunities to engage full-time virtual private school. And when student and family circumstances trigger that need, as a former head coach and scout, I consistently ask myself, which players are going to seek their level? Which players are going to fully realize their potential? In my perspective, Florida's ESAs exist to competitively elevate our quality of education. Florida's filled with talented students. Talented students who can either be developed or neglected based on their environmental conditions and circumstances and the opportunities we provide them. I urge you to do the next right thing. The next right thing, and support the option to use ESAs for private, virtual, full-time education. I really do believe it will help Florida students and families fully realize their potentials together. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ethan Merchant? Mr. Merchant, are you? Here you are. You're recognized, sir. And then on deck is Miranda Badala.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm here representing Florida Parents for School Options. We're a broad coalition that supports school choice in all types of forms. We're thankful for the passage of HB1 last session, and we're looking forward to being a resource as we build upon that legislation. We're also very thankful for the amendment from Representative Franklin that would address many of our concerns. Although it was withdrawn, many of our parents are online parents and would like the option to send their children to a full-time private online school. Our virtual parents understand the difference in high-quality teacher-led full-time online school, and they are good partners. And with many parents concerned about safety and other issues, having this option would give parents peace of mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Miranda Padala, you're recognized. And then on deck is Catherine Gordon. Thank you for being here, Ms. Padala.
Sorry, it's Padilla, like a quesadilla, sorry.
Oh, Padilla, all right.
Thanks.
Not much for that type of food, but yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I gotta take a deep breath because this is way out of my comfort zone, but. Okay.
You're doing great.
Thanks, good morning everyone, and thank you so much for this opportunity. I am so thankful to be here and for the representatives that have taken the time to help us through our grassroots efforts over the past months. But we still feel like we are getting lost in the mix without a large lobbyist group to help us, or all our emails seeming to go into like this abyss of hope. My three children attend a private school located in Pinellas County. Our school has been registered as a private school for 20 plus years and has been in compliance with all private school requirements, attendance and days of school requirements, statutes and DOE standards for those years. Our school model has always been that children are on campus in a traditional classroom setting. On Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, they are remote learning facilitated by the parents on Mondays and Wednesdays using the school's curriculum and teacher lesson plans. The lessons are available through Google Classroom and RenWeb. It really is a wonderful school model that allows us as parents to come alongside our children and to partner with their educators while having the oversight and support of a private school. I am here to speak about HB 1403 Section 6 regarding the wording under Statute 1002.421 Subsection 1I, which relates to private school eligibility obligations for school choice scholarship programs. Currently in HB 1403 Section 6, I believe the wording is trying to clarify that regular and direct contact with teachers can be satisfied through a two-day minimum at the physical location of the school. While it seems like this might help our situation, there is other wording in the section that causes some confusion. Section 6 also contains wording like students enrolled in a personalized education program and references student learning plans, which are synonymously known to be language used with the PEP scholarship, which is for home education students, which we are not. Here are some of the hurdles we have had. Coming into this year, we had hoped that because scholarship options were now open to both full-time homeschool families along with traditional private schools, that our school, which is somewhere in that middle ground, would be able to use scholarship funds. However, just a few weeks before the school year started, we were told we would not be able to use the funds unless our students were on campus 5 days a week. This was confusing to us, as it seems that both ends of the spectrum can use the scholarships, but schools like ours in the middle ground are being excluded. We have been denied the FTC FES EO scholarship because our students are not considered full-time private school students just because we do not meet on campus 5 days a week, even though our students do a full-time workload picked and planned by our private school that again meets all other school eligibility requirements. We have been denied the PEP scholarship because our students are not true homeschoolers, because we use curriculum prescribed by the school, and per the PEP guidelines, a private school does not count as a home education program. So while it appears that HB 1403 is trying to help us in this middle ground, we fear that we will still be refused to use the FTC, FES, EO scholarships options like other private schools. If the wording passes as is, I believe we would have to unenroll all our students from a longstanding, reputable private school. Then we would have to apply and re-enroll as PEP students and hope that we would even get the scholarship or have the mechanisms to do this at our school. Yet even this is a gray area because the PEP rules do not recognize private schools as home education programs. And I strongly believe this would delay or even deny reimbursements to our families, even if we had to go this route. I would ask that the wording in Section 6 be revisited to simply state students enrolled in a private school or personalized education program, so on and so on and so on. I do recognize there is a lot of nuance in this process and wording that needs to be used. But I also know Florida offers some amazing education options for families, so I'm hoping we can work together to help another wonderful option for Florida families. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. Catherine Gordon, you're recognized, and then on deck is Adrian Miranda.
This seemed like a really good idea until I got up here, so... I can't thank all of you enough for all your time, energy, perseverance, and love you dedicate to our children. I hope you see your impact and know that it will affect generations to come. Rep. Tomko, seeing you in these last few meetings and watching your determination seeing this through has been encouraging to witness. All of you here are superheroes in my books, and I hope you can put your capes on right now and help us here today. It's hard for me to know where to start, but I know my time's limited. I'm here today out of pure exhaustion and desperation. This began in August of last year when in the weeks before school started, we were told we could not receive the scholarship. Why, you ask? Because we are a part of the small majority who are private schools using the remote learning model. We meet the 3 days a week at a physical location and use the teacher-directed learning plans at home the other 2 days. What keeps holding us back is the verbiage in Statute 1002.421, being at the school's physical location all 5 days. Everyone has said they're on our side and want this for our school, yet we keep hitting roadblock after roadblock. It started with Step Up when we spoke with our school rep, then eventually made our way up to the Step Up president, Doug Tuthill. And while he completely supported us, he said verbatim, "We are in total agreement with what you want. I just don't want to go to jail for violating state law. We're brainstorming possible solutions now." While the brainstorming session was unsuccessful, their hands were tied, and Step Up then instructed us to contact the DOE. So we sent emails and phone calls to Governor DeSantis' office, Commissioner Diaz's office, Adam Emerson, and his team who leads the school chores. They responded, and I quote, "Students utilizing the eligible private school option must be full-time private school students and must be educated full-time on-site at the school's physical location." There it was again, Statute 1002.421. Next, we filed a variance. We thought that would be our answer. We had a parent who's a lawyer type up a 5-page variance that I have here showing all the legal reasons we should receive it. Also, we had over 160 comments that I also have here that all supported it. We thought, this is it. Well, guess what happened? Our variance was denied, and we were devastated. But back to the drawing board we went. We contacted all our local reps, Reps Yeager, Anderson, Bernie Jack, Rep Castor, Rep Luna, Rep Gonzalez-Pittman, you're in my district. And I personally, we all contacted everybody. We begged and pleaded, and thankfully Rep. Anderson joined our fight. He told us there would be a glitch bill. They knew we were missed, and here it was. Praise God, we saw HB 1403. But we realized again, we're missed. This was geared towards PEP students. Like Mrs. Padilla mentioned, we would need to unenroll as private school students and have our school more like a co-op that leaves the parents in control. Myself and our entire school don't want this. Just like Representative Williams, you mentioned at the last meeting how all your children needed different learning environments. So do all four of mine. Our small private school is very recognized in our area. We recently had our alumni, the valedictorian and salutatorian to Governor DeSantis' alma mater. We feel so defeated that we keep getting overlooked. We can't figure out what it is. No one has been able to give us a straight answer except the physical location. I've watched all of you be so supportive, and everyone we've spoken to has been so supportive. So why is this so difficult for us? We're a private school which has much more oversight than PEP participants, and we want to receive the FES EO scholarship that our families deserve. So we're here today requesting that you please just add the words "or private school" to line 1892 to allow us and others like us to receive this scholarship. We think it's as simple as that. A small amendment of just three words would be an answer to our prayers. Thank you for all your time, and please don't leave us behind again. God bless.
Thank you. Ms. Miranda, Adrian Miranda, you're recognized. And on deck is Bethany Martin.
Good morning. I just want to say thank you for giving me this moment, because it's a total drive time to get here today of 6 hours. So thank you for letting me speak right now.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to each and every one of you for giving my children the PEP scholarship. This has been a life-changing education for my children. We've been able to do things that we have never been able to do before as homeschoolers, truly. Having a degree in education and teaching in the public school system in Florida, I'm now a home educator, and two of my kids are on the PEP scholarship, and one I'm applying for in the spring. And I just hope you understand that homeschool is different. I'm what's called an eclectic homeschooler. I don't just get one big curriculum in a box and take it out and let my kids do it. I pull pieces from all sorts of places to tailor it to my kids. I don't teach my son like I teach my daughter. I use different techniques. I use different materials. So therefore, I feel that the instructional materials and equipment for electives is absolutely necessary to give our kids the best possible education. Like our family, I want to point out that we use elective classes from digital sources. So that means we're taking classes online on our computers. For example, I use outschool.com and Yellow Spot Sun. Yellow Spot Sun is an art activity where they give us the videos to do the instructions, and then we do those projects in home. We can do the lessons, but we also need the materials. What use is it if my child can go on that lesson and take and see the video, but not be able to paint the picture, not be able to shape the clay that we're supposed to use for the project? We need the materials. We need the equipment because we are doing it at our home. We're not going to a studio. We're not going to an arboretum. We're not going to an industrial kitchen to take these elective classes. As a homeschooler, we're choosing to do our elective classes at home, just as we're doing our core curriculum classes at home. So I hope you understand that elective classes can be done outside the home, but for a lot of us, it's done inside the home as well, because it's from digital sources. I also want you to know that we also strive for cross-curricular connections with my students. My kids love not just putting science in a box and not just math in a box. We love to have them see the connections between science and math, between math and art, between art and history. And we can't do that unless we have the materials for those elective classes. And lastly, I hope you understand there are some homeschool families, like mine. We have one income. And we have chosen a financially difficult road. I am no longer working outside the home. I am a full-time educator inside our home. And we've chosen to give that education to our kids. And that means we are now able to participate in electives through this PEP scholarship. Before the scholarship, we were never able to do electives. I hope you understand. We didn't have the money to buy instruments. We didn't have the money to get these art materials and things that we do to do the elective classes. We couldn't do it before the PEP scholarship, and if this bill stays the same in the language that it has, we won't be able to do it next year. We are financially strapped to the point where we can take the classes, but we won't be able to provide the equipment to take those classes. We won't be able to have the piano or the keyboard or the flute or any of those instruments in order to take those lessons. PEP will pay for the lessons, but we as a family won't be able to afford those instruments because we only have one income. In closing, since this bill is to help clarify the spending of the PEP scholarship, I just want to help everyone understand that we as homeschoolers We didn't ask for the horse. We don't want the horse. What we do want are watercolor paints. We want paintbrushes. We want music sheets and keyboards. We don't want anything elaborate or extravagant. We want the basic things to do those classes that we are, that my kids love to do. So I just want to leave you with that. And I want to thank you so much for your time and investing into this program for my kids, as well as so many other homeschool families that I am regularly involved with. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your dedication. And thank you for representing my family to give my children an equitable education along the lines of their private school and public school counterparts. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am. Bethany Martin. You're recognized, ma'am. And on deck is Robin Hisham.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to speak, and thank you for all your hard work on this bill. Bethany Martin, I am a mom, a teacher, and an administrator from International Community School in Winter Park, Florida. We're going to say ICS for short, because it's a mouthful. We are a licensed private school. You have heard from another school, another family, and administrator that we have similar schools and we have similar problems. I'm going to talk about that and then going to something more specific. We do meet on campus 3 days a week, and we do have 2 days of remote learning. We are constantly denied being part of the private school eligibility for the scholarships because we don't meet all of our 5 instructional days on campus. We recognize that this bill, 1403 language, now allows students in the PEP scholarship to attend schools like ours. However, our own private students, school students, are still not allowed to access this financial resource. So we are asking if our school model is okay for PEP, why is it not okay for the other scholarships? We have not been able to have that question answered. Secondly, we have been asked, why can't our students just register as PEP? Our school is a pre-K through 12 school, and we have some significant concerns if we unenroll all of our students to be able to access this financial resources. The first of all is diplomas. Our families come to our school for private school privileges. They want fully recognized diplomas from an accredited private school. This would not happen if all of our students were registered as PEP students. According to the PEP laws, we understand it, they receive a notice of completion like homeschool study programs do. We see no language to this change, and we see no language to change this in HB 43, so we're very concerned about our high schoolers and where they're going after school. The second big impact that we would have is on attendance. As we understand it, if a majority of our students, which most of our families are one income, or we say one and a half income because of the way we do model, and parents have to be into the education part with our students, so they might want to take this option. But if we do that, then we would report close to zero private school students to our state for our DOE number. This significantly puts our accreditation at risk. We are nationally and accredited. We are nationally and regionally accredited, which puts us in competition with other private schools around us. So we're very concerned about losing our accreditations because of the attendance requirements. Also, records keeping. As a private school, we keep all of the student records, like attendance and transcripts, curriculum, test reporting. We do all of that because that's what our families wanted. They wanted private school privileges and awards. If they were all PEP students, these transcripts are held by parents, and most of our students want and come to a private school, so they have these private school transcripts. It would also impact our relationship with Bright Futures and all the volunteer hours that our high schoolers accumulate and go on and are reported. So we are humbly asking, we would like for you to consider language to be revised to include licensed and or accredited private schools included with these remote learning days to be eligible for the same PEP provisions that are listed in the HB 1403. We recognize that maybe we've tried to help these schools that are falling in between, but we are very concerned about having to register all of our kids as PEP. We would ICS and the majority of our parents have and extended family, we're a very family-oriented school, have reached out to a lot of representatives and senators and written committee members. You may have gotten some emails from me already on this, but we would still like to be able to have a conversation of, is there a misunderstanding of who we are and what we represent and how best to be able to serve our kids in the private school section rather than having to change who we are and having everyone as PEP. So we are very concerned about having to go that route. And if I am incorrect in my interpretation of the law, I would love to have that conversation too so we know how to go further. So I appreciate you guys taking your time and hearing me. And thank you for all of your hard work.
Thank you, ma'am. Robin Isham, did I pronounce your last name correctly? All right. Par for the course for me. You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Robin Isham. So far, two members of our school have already spoken. That is Ms. Padilla and Mrs. Gordon. So I'm going to be really brief. I am the head of school at North Bay Christian Academy, where we do have that combination of private teachers, professional teachers working with a combination of, let me just go ahead and read that, probably the safest thing. First of all, like Katie said, I do believe that what you all are doing is heroic on behalf of all of the students in Florida. So thank you very much. So our private school combines classroom teaching with remote instruction. In short, just as Mrs. Martin stated, who is representing a different school, we are concerned about being asked to switch to PEP. We would like to, in short, the ask for today is to stay as a private Christian school for all of the reasons that have already been stated. We work with excellent, passionate teachers, and we have a one-on-one off-site partnership, which is a tutorials type of relationship. So when I first learned about this model, what was so exciting is you get all of that excellent private school combined with that tutoring at home. And it really does produce incredible results. So this was mentioned briefly, but I will state it again. Our governor's alma mater is in our neighborhood, and our graduates in the last 2 years have taken valedictorian, salutatorian 2 years ago, and salutatorian this year. So we feel like the model itself, our students do the Terra Nova testing, this year the Iowa testing. We've done that for 24 years. Our students score in the 70th, 80th, and 90th percentile routinely. And finally, we have a private Christian school in our area, and routinely those top awards go to our students. Last year, the highest award they gave went to one of our students, and she received an additional 3 awards with that. So we just feel like what the outcome of our school, we can prove to you on paper with objective assessments. It just works. And we're not new. This is a 24-year-old private school. So we really do appreciate all you're doing. We're excited about the money that you're giving these families to choose private schools. We just ask that, as stated, we are considered a private school. We do not want to switch to PEP. The previous speaker did a great job of explaining all the reasons we do not want to deconstruct our school and have to reconstruct it again in order to receive these funds. Finally, let me just close by saying we would love it if representatives would come and visit our school. We would love it if you speak to principals in the schools in our area about our students. We would love to provide assessment tools for, actual proof to what we are saying in our test results. We believe if you truly understood this model, you would not just slightly support it, you would be champions of it. When people come to our school and they learn what we're doing, it is odd, but it is exceptional. So we just ask for your help today, and thank you again for all you're doing.
Good morning. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning and for all the work that you're doing on school choice.
I am also a parent at International Community School. And this is a school, as we've been speaking, that we attend campus 3 days, and we have 2 remote learning days in Winter Park, Florida. I initially chose International Community School for my oldest daughter, Alana, when I began looking for other options for her as she completed the 3rd grade in public school. Unfortunately, she was below grade level in reading, and testing confirmed that she had a learning disability and a language disorder. So I started looking for other options for her, and that's when I found ICS. I do want to be clear that I am not against public school. I am a certified guidance counselor, and I worked in the public schools for over 10 years. However, the interventions that were available to Alana, they were not working, and I knew I had to find another option. I enrolled her in ICS in August of 2020, and she entered the 4th grade. This school model allowed her to attend school 3 days a week and receive one-on-one instruction with me on her 2 remote learning days. I have to follow the school's lesson plans, and all work is turned in the next campus day. My children have certified teachers. We take standardized testing. In fact, we're taking the Iowa tests, and we have an advanced curriculum. This school model changed her life. She's making educational gains I honestly never thought would be possible. She is joyful again, and she loves school. I'm here to speak to you today because ICS, a private school licensed by the state of Florida, is not allowed to be an eligible private school for state scholarships. The language that defines regular and direct contact with the teachers states it must occur a minimum of 170 days at the school's physical location. So because of our 2 remote learning days, we are blocked. To be clear, our children cannot have PEP because they are enrolled as private school students. We cannot have EO because they are not on campus 5 days a week. And like my daughter, who has the UA scholarship, I'm denied tuition reimbursement because we do not fall under the eligible private school category. House Bill 1403 is proposing a change to this rule, but it seems to only include PEP students. From my understanding, it sounds like PEP students could come to my school, take classes, and they could get reimbursed. But the children attending the school, because they're enrolled there, we cannot. This is causing so much confusion, and we just feel like, why are we being left out? Why are we one of the only models that still cannot participate in these state scholarships? And like the people speaking previously, if you came to our school and you saw what our children are doing, you would be so impressed. My daughter that has a language disorder is transcribing Latin. I mean, these are not things that children are getting for interventions in public school. These things have made such a difference to her.
Pam, could I ask you to?
Yes, I'm sorry. So we're asking for you to amend this language so that we can be included. We're happy to discuss the language that you may need. And while I respect that you are creating more oversight and fiscal responsibility with House Bill 1403, please allow the most legitimate reason for this scholarship to our parents, which is tuition at a licensed private school. Thank you.
Thank you. Brenda Dickinson, you're recognized, ma'am. And then on deck is William Maddox.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. There are really good parts of this bill that I support, but we still haven't gotten some language in this bill that needs to go in the bill to fix some of the problems. So I had to mark opponent, but I'm mixed. The parts that I feel like we need to address, which are important, is there's a misunderstanding that parents can take their children to the public school and get some of the courses for electives that the students would like to take. But the way the bill is set up, the PEP student has to pay the public school out of their scholarship. There's no mechanism for that to happen. So we don't have a single school district, to my knowledge, that can accept the money for the PEP, therefore they're denied. We think there needs to be some language in this bill that requires the school districts to work through the DOE or work with the SFOs to figure out a contract that would allow the public schools to accept PEP funds so that parents could take their child and get some of the activities that they would like to have, maybe be in a band or in an orchestra or something like that. That has not been addressed, and we've been working with PEP students and districts since HB1 went into effect. The other thing that I feel like has to be addressed are the ancillary statutes that address home education but don't address PEP. Home education students and PEP are two separate things, and the statute that required the that the PEP have the same flexibility and opportunity as home education students didn't address dual enrollment. It didn't address Bright Futures, which is a big deal. It did not address extracurricular activities. Now, we've been able to work out some deals with different organization or state entities to try to make that part work. But our parents didn't want to take the PEP student, the PEP scholarship, because they weren't insured they were going to be able to get a Bright Future scholarship. So you need to address those statutes and add PEP students into those statutes so that the students would be able to get those privileges that are afforded in law to home education students. Another important thing that I feel like, and people have been here speaking about the instructional materials, I believe there's a much better way to address it than to limit it to core subjects for equipment. I believe that parents ought to have the flexibility to use their money for whatever customizes the child's education. However, we would recommend that there be a spending cap on single items of $1,500. Maybe you would go with $1,000. Our recommendation is $1,500. As opposed to limiting the subjects, limit the items that they can spend that money on. And then if there is a reason for them to be able to, the need demands that the child gets something more expensive, they would have to get approval from the SFOs to do that. Let me give you an example. There's now an Olympic sport for paddleboard, and some of the students with the UA scholarship have utilized that this scholarship to buy a paddleboard. Now people are getting, you folks, legislators are getting criticized for some of the big items that they're spending the money on, but some of these are really, really important to these particular students. So rather than limiting the subjects, I would recommend you limiting the spending on big items. And I think it's important that you amend the digital devices section that's in there, because people can take online courses, but if they don't have an up-to-date computer, they can't access those courses. So digital devices, computers are included for the UA students, but not for the PEP student. One last thing I'd like to bring up today is that in the legislation, the purchasing guide is going to be decided by the University of Central Florida Center for Unique Abilities. We would recommend that there would be an advisory board of parents representing the disabilities that are covered in the UA so that parents can give some advice on teaching those children and what their needs are in developing that purchase guide. So we have some really, I believe, important additions to make to this bill, and I don't believe that we've yet gotten an opportunity to include those as amendments. So thank you for hearing us, and we hope we can work together in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. William Maddox, you're recognized.
Uh, I'm Bill Maddox. I'm the director of the Marshall Center for Education Options at the James Madison Institute, and I have really three things to say. One is thank you, thank you, thank you for HB 1 last year. Huge development. Whenever I travel around the country, I encounter people from other states who are envious, who are jealous, much like the lady from Tennessee, of what we've got here in Florida, and that's thanks to you guys. And we really appreciate it. Thank you for addressing many of the problems that we have encountered with HB 1. These are invariably going to arise, and so we are appreciative of the fact that this new bill, 1403, addresses concerns like the payment schedules and things of that nature. The last thing I want to say is this. I fear that many of us who are supportive of these programs are spending too much time listening to the critics of these programs who will never support these programs, and not enough time listening to some of the parents who have very legitimate concerns about how these programs are operating or why they are locked out. And the reason I say that is this. Yes, it's great that more than 100,000 families were added to the scholarship rolls this past year, and Florida is now serving more than all of the other states in the country combined with its school choice programs. But a step-up report from several months ago indicated that there were more than 90,000 families here in Florida that applied for and were awarded scholarships that chose not to use them. This suggests to us that there is a very serious supply-demand problem here, that our supply is not keeping up with demand. And that says to me that there are several things that we ought to do to try to fix that. You've heard these things already today. One, fix the allow online private school programs to be included, not just FLVS, so that students who want those opportunities, full-time or part-time, can have them faith-based, non-faith-based. Allow online privates. Secondly, fix this hybrid school problem that we've heard described about, because this is an emerging area of very innovative, creative activity where a lot of schools are going to three-day, two-day kinds of programs that the teachers direct, as you've heard, but two or more days are sometimes taken at home with parents. There are other emerging programs that fall under the category of learning centers that are more suited for PEP programs. We need to understand this. We need to address and fix this hybrid school problem so that more and more families that are interested in this can take advantage of it. And then lastly, I would say, eliminate the sweeping prohibitions on PEP expenditures. We've heard these complaints from critics. Again, as a taxpayer, I'm not troubled by the fact that families have used PEP funds for trampolines or paddle boards or other things. But if people really want to prohibit those things, then spell those out and just identify the specific things you don't want. Right now, what you've got in 1403 is a sweeping prohibition that includes all sorts of art and music and PE sorts of programs, and it means that families won't be able to spend money on very legitimate expenses. Easels, paints, modeling clay, musical instruments, kickballs, badminton nets, foreign language programs. What this does is it sends a signal to parents that if they get involved in this area, they may subject themselves to all sorts of nitpicking. And if I can bring you one report back from the last weekend where I spent some time with some innovative educators down in Broward County that are doing some amazing things in the micro school and hybrid school world, one of the things that they said to me is, if we sense that this is going to be a world that's full of nitpicking, we're not sure we want to get involved. We've got 90,000 families that are looking for something. We need to serve them. I think we need to do just as I said, free up the online, deal with the hybrid school, and perhaps most of all, make sure that this nitpicking on the PEP program ceases and that we allow parents to have the latitude to use monies for legitimate expenses in all these ways that we've described. Thank you again. You're doing great work. Keep it up, and let's fix these problems.
Thank you, sir. Barney Bishop waves in support. Ryan Kennedy, Florida Citizens Alliance, waves in support. Nathan Hoffman, again, waves in support. And Edward Briggs, Florida Coalition for Scholarship Schools, waves in support. That ends our public testimony. Members, we are in debate, and I'll make you aware we have 45 minutes, and we also have another bill to present. Any debate? Chair Fine.
Thank you. I don't think I need to be held to the end. I want to compliment Representative Tomcow. What you did last year was an extraordinary achievement that many of us worked on for a very long time. But when you transform something as big as education, you're going to have to tweak it along the way. And that's exactly what you're doing here today. And I suspect next year, although you'll probably move on from the chairmanship that you have, either you or someone that you'll be directing will be doing it again. That's the way it is. But I noticed as I was sitting here, you do something that members should do more, I should do more including, which is you sat there and you were listening to everyone who came up and you were taking notes as to what it is that they had to say, because you do care about the concerns that they have. I had one early on, which was I had people reach out to me and I had people say, well, you're going to get rid of the Hope Scholarship. And I said, well, yeah, we're going to get rid of the Hope Scholarship. You don't need it. The Hope Scholarship was for a certain category of people. Well, if everyone can get a school choice scholarship, why do you need this one? And they said, well, because the Hope Scholarship, you could get it any time in the year. I raised that issue to you and Chair Masullo, and boom, it got fixed. The point is that you are listening to the issues. But we have made massive, massive strides. And when you create something so big and so transformative, it's going to take a while. I think one of the things we probably didn't expect is the number of schools that have chosen to still not take the scholarship. I mean, it's amazing to me that there are schools out there that have said, no, we don't want it. There's no rational reason for that. So there's clearly things that we have to do, but I would say that the fact that there are 90,000 people who've gotten the scholarship and have chosen not to use it speaks to the power of the idea that you did last year. It shows that this is what people want, and we're going to get there, but you don't turn a train in 5 seconds. And so it takes a while to do it. You're doing a great job, and I'm really proud of you, and I know that you're going to continue to fight this fight this year and beyond.
Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized. Debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Rep. Tomcow, I want to say thank you for being the person that you are. Rep. Tomcow and I had several conversations on last evening, to the point we were still on the phone texting and emailing each other as we had ones coming up to speak about the concerns that they have on this bill. My last conversation I had with her, she was in one elevator, and I was in the opposite elevator on our way here. She walked out the elevator. I walked out the other. We met at the door, still having a conversation on how we can make this better. But as your ranking member and as a member that has been here, when we did HB1 last year, I was very disappointed. I was disappointed because I felt that the bill was rushed. I was disappointed with the Hope Scholarship because I felt that money was being taken from our public school system and put into a program or an organization or a holding place for students that would not be able to accept all of that money. And at this point, we have public school systems that is owed millions of dollars. Millions of dollars because that money has not been used. And I'm very concerned about the accountability, being transparency, and the taxpayers' dollar. And if we can't show where we are actually the number of students that's using these scholarships, the number of schools that's in the public school system, the number of schools that's in the private school system, we don't have accountability of the taxpayer money. And that's one of the things Rep. Tomcow and I have been working back and forth to try to find out. When we speak on SFO and DOE actually being able to work as partners to actually get this data to us to make sure that we are keeping track of the taxpayer money, we are keeping a track of our students. I remember Rep. Fine had a bill that he was concerned about students that was actually missing. If we don't have a correct count on how many students that we're serving, on what we actually put in the dollars and how many dollars is being used for each student, we are not doing our best for the students that we serve. And to the point of being transparent about the Title I schools, We have a pile of money, millions of dollars, sitting in an account, and we have our Title I schools struggling because they don't have the funds available for our students. We are not doing the proper account for the people that we serve. And the bill states that we're going to currently hold 25%. Instead of holding the 25%, let's do 10%. Because we have students and we have schools that need additional funding, and we are holding this money in an account just because it's not fair to the people that we're serving. And I want to say again, Rep. Tomko, I thank you for taking the time out and being willing to work with me on some of the problems that I have concerns about. I have one district that has sent me a text saying they're missing over $15 million from last year. And I shared it with her. So these are some of the concerns I have, but I want to continue to work on this. And the young lady that came up and said, we are the forgotten people. That's when she and I started texting each other. Is there a way that we can kind of fix this problem? So as we serve on these education committee, we understand, I understand, that education is the foundation for our state, for our children. And I want to say, Chair Masula, I have worked with you on this education committee for the last 3 years. And I find it to be very educational for me and very helpful for the students that we can help. So thank you.
You're welcome. Reb Woodson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair. Reb Tomko, thank you for taking the time to talk to me, to listen to my concerns, and also to the fact that you have shown the willingness to listen, to work with others, and meet each other halfway wherever you can. And I know sometimes it might not be possible, but you always try to find a way. And for that, I appreciate you. And you know one of my concerns is from line 135 to 144. You took the time to explain to me why it wasn't possible to add the public school to that area. But you did say you and I can sit down and talk and see what else can be done in order to ensure that we are also fair to our public school students. So I truly appreciate that. You heard the concern of so many parents this morning. And like Rev Fine indicated, you took note, you listened. And that's what we can ask for. And I know you are going to do your best to see how we can collectively sit down and work together for the betterment of all students in the state of Florida. I really appreciate, you know, your passion, because you have put in a lot of work into this bill. I appreciate the fact that you truly care, and I look forward to working with you as well. Williams, I already have an appointment with you for us to sit down and see what else we can craft to make sure everybody's concern is taken into consideration, even though we cannot please everyone, but we will try our best. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Rep. Valdez, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to thank all the speakers for coming out today and sharing your concerns. As I was sitting right here in front of Representative Tomko, you know, the eye contact was going on. We were having some slight conversations about some of these issues. So thank you for bringing it to light. I think that you will find that in the years that I've been here, serving as your state representative, we have seen massive education bills come through that, you know, in 60 days is really tough to come up with really good, solid policies that we don't have to come back and retweak. So I am so confident that your voices have been heard. It may not be fixed this particular session, and just know that your voices have been heard. So I think that collectively we can really work together with Representative Tomko and all of us here, because we do care about all children, regardless of their abilities. And I truly believe that in everything that we do, you know, we don't have an endless bucket of money. I wish we did, but we really don't. So when we think about these opportunities for all students, we have to think that, you know, there's a limit on what the budget is. And, you know, a thought came through. What happens when the homeschooled child is going to go and take driver's ed? Do you rent a car? Do you buy a car? Will the scholarship cover that? You know, so think about these things that are long-term, and I don't mean to sound flippant, but these are realities, right? So we have to be equitable. We have to be able to afford children their opportunities to grow and prosper in an environment that is conducive to their learning. So this is a little complicated because of the fact that we don't have endless dollars. I wish we did. If that were the case, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So I'm looking forward to continuing to work with Representative Tomkow in reference to fixing some of these things or just enhancing it. So then maybe next session when we come back, we'll have that conversation and be able to define some terms in statute and really help the SFOs in this process. Because I think that one of the challenges is that both SFOs have different philosophies of what's covered and what's not. And I think that that's something that needs to be unified so that then there is no discrepancy on any family. So I want to thank you all again for coming out to speak to us today and share your concerns. Representative Tomkow, great job. I know it's challenging. And you learned education, like, really, I think it was kind of sort of, here, do this. And you had to put your feet in the fire and get to learn FEFP, which is really complicated. And your dedication is definitely shown. So thank you, Chair Masullo, for your leadership as well. Ranking Member Williams, thank you for always bringing the real talk, and I appreciate the what the future will bring in making this bill a lot better, possibly next session.
Further debate, members? Any further debate? All right. Well, I also want to thank all the members of the public that have come and testified, particularly the parents. I'm impressed that you take such an interest in your children's education. You certainly are a model for our state. Rep. Tomkow, you deserve an A for all your hard work. You know, last year when we passed this bill, we knew it would be an iterative process, and it still will be. And it will continue to evolve in the next several years until we get it to be the best thing that Florida has ever done. We're already number one in the country. But we're not going to rest on our laurels. There are some issues. We'll probably experience more issues in the future. But we have to realize that there's philosophy also coming into politics. And part of that philosophy we use as we shape our legislation. It's not to say that there aren't problems. And today we've heard several issues. But by and large, this bill has done remarkable things and changed lives of millions and millions of people. And even though there's only hundreds of thousands currently involved, those people will touch millions of lives. And we need to keep that in mind when we pass this bill and when we do other things for education. You're recognized to close.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Chair Masullo. And thank you, members of the committee. I know we have all spent a lot of time talking through this particular piece of legislation, and I appreciate all of your thoughts, all of your comments, all of your concerns. Members of the audience that are here today, I think it was said that I'm sure the emails go into an abyss of no one pays attention to them. That is not true. We all hear what you are here. We see what you are writing to us. We hear the voicemails that you're leaving. We have the conversations. It might not necessarily take place in this moment, but it's taking place on the phone at all hours of the morning and the night and through the day. And, you know, what is a weekend during session? Because I was working on this all weekend with staff and with stakeholders and with many of you. And so I just want to say that because we have had a very collaborative process, and I, you know, pride myself on being a very collaborative member. I would say, you know, last year what we did in terms of Chair Tuck's bill with HB1 and what we did in the FEFP, members, I see in real time the amount of students, the amount of money we're spending on students, where that money is going, how fast it's going, if it's not going. You know, these are all issues that I am very aware of, and I have the privilege to be at the forefront of. So I don't take this lightly. I don't take the pieces of the puzzle, you know, lightly. I make sure that we are doing it to make sure that the longevity of this program is put into place to where, you know, my grandkids will be able to be a part and benefit from this. And I think that we have a responsibility, and I've said this in every committee, to be fiscal stewards with those dollars, to make sure that we are actually, we are helping the education of the student. You know, a lot of things are added on, and they're great, and a lot of, you know, things are needed for a child to grow up and be successful. But if we're going to be, if we're going to have equity in all of the forms of education, we have to take a real look at what is actually going to help that child go from point A to point B and to succeed. I know that we have heard a lot of different conversations and a lot of different you know, ideas that have come up, and they might be ideas that we are able to work on. Unfortunately, this bill is very much tailored to fix and rectify some of the situations that we saw over the last year with the rollout. And I imagine some of these deeper policy conversations will continue to grow and continue to be a part of this committee and others. And so I look forward to that. And as Chair Fine said, yes, I did take a lot of notes. So I am listening, and I would ask for your favorable support. Thank you all so much.
Very good. Having closed on her bill, Misty, please call the vote.
Representative Spankson?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Mello? Rizzo?
Yes.
Trabolsi?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Masullo?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Misty. Members, by your unanimous vote, will show CS for HB 1403 reported favorably as amended. Congratulations, Chair Tomko. Members, we're on a roll today. Next up, we have HB 523 by our own Rep. Kennedy. Rep. Kennedy, you're recognized to present Florida Seal Fine Arts Program.
Thank you, Chair. Excellence needs to be recognized and celebrated, especially in our high school graduates. Currently, Florida has 4 diploma recognitions, which include academic excellence, foreign language and industry certification. Adding the Fine Arts Diploma Seal makes the statement that we prioritize the arts and we value objective achievement and merit. This new Seal of Fine Arts program will recognize high school graduates who have attained a high level of skill in specified arts coursework, juried competitions, volunteer service, and the creation and submission of original works of art. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Members, questions on her bill? Questions? All right, seeing none, do we have any public testimony? We do. Nancy Lothar waves in support. You're still here? Thank you. Anthony Cavajo waves in support. Daryl Ward is a proponent. Mr. Ward, you're recognized to appear.
Thank you. My name is Daryl Ward. I'm the Executive Director of the Polk Arts and Cultural Alliance. So that is my title as the Executive Director of a nonprofit. I am actually a recovering English teacher, public school educator of 32 years, the last 15 of which were spent as an administrator at a visual and performing arts high school. This bill establishing a Florida Seal of Fine Arts is an important step promoting the value of a rigorous arts education. Researchers have long recognized the skills that art courses teach. Skills like collaboration, time management, discipline, and problem solving. This designation is important because what we recognize or publicly acknowledge as a society are the things that we deem important. This program would demonstrate to students that what they are learning in their arts classes is indeed important, that we as a society value that knowledge and those skills. Thank you, Representative Kennedy and the other legislators who have shepherded this bill to this point. I am grateful for your continued support of arts education.
Thank you. Barney Bishop waves in support. That ends public testimony. Members, were in debate. Any debate? Debate. Seeing none, Rep. Kennedy, you're recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to thank my Senate counterparts, Senator Perry and Senator Rusan, who have been a part of this for so many years. And I also want to thank the co-sponsors who have joined me in this bill. And one of the things that I think is interesting about that is so many of us sitting here have benefited from the arts, and we have found that to be a very important part of our own education. And so we are excited to be able to highlight and celebrate the impact of the arts in the lives of students across the state. And with that, I close. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Having closed on our bill, Misty, please call the vote.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Esposito?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Franklin?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
McLean?
Yes.
Mello? Rizzo?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Tremont?
Yes.
Tuck?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Masullo?
Yes.
19 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Members, by your vote, will show HB 523 reported favorably. Congratulations, Rep. Kennedy. Members and guests, thank you for attending our committee today. Thank you for all of your support, hard work of the committee members, and the presenters. Seeing no further business before us, Vice Chair Bell, move we rise, and we are adjourned.